Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and nerds of all ages, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions. Joining me, Sasha Kaplan, the one, the only, the ever fabulous, is one of my closest friends and the co-host of this podcast, Caitlin Moore!
Yay! Hope you're ready for another Spidey adventure.
Today, we are continuing our Spidey-thon. With Caitlin's favorite movie, and that would be The Amazing Spider-Man, starring Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone and that guy from The Replacements.
Yeah,
we're just gonna sit on that one, folks.
Pretty much. I would say I forgot he was in The Replacements.
He was the soccer guy, and his name is Rhys Ifans.
Not important.
Also playing in this film are
like
Sally
I said,
Field.
The guy from The Replacements.
Yes. Also playing in, also starring in this movie is Aunt May as Sally Fields, Martin Sheen as Ben Parker, and of course, Dennis Leary as George Stacy. Now, Caitlin is the woman with the question, so I'm gonna hand the proverbial mic over to her.
You know what? I feel like we should just start off this trend strong. Did we watch the same movie?
Yeah, a little bit. So how is this the same? Well, okay, like, this is a Spider-Man reboot, right? And, like, Peter Parker's origins doesn't really change. So it's not like there wasn't anything like different in terms of Peter becoming Spider-Man they could really do. But there are, aside from Peter's origin, there is one other, actually, because I was going to bring this up. Is Dr. Connors basically the Sam Raimi's Goblin? Dramatic.
Good question. I think he's actually kind of different. Well, you know what? Yeah, no, he is. It just takes him longer to get there. Because I would also argue that this real movie's villain is still Norman Osborn if he wasn't actively dying. Or at least the guy in the suit who wanted to experiment on homeless veterans.
Yeah, he's sort of a proverbial bad guy. He's like the man behind the curtain, because so it's he's dying. But this film does give us an additional layer that the Sam Raimi films didn't, which is Peter's parents. And this question that unfortunately never actually gets answered in these two films, which is what actually happened to Peter's parents. The implication that the end of this film gives us is that Norman Osborn had the Parkers killed because he was looking for the secret formula that Peter ends up giving to Dr. Connors in this movie that ends up starting the whole shtick of the plot here, right?
Right. Because his parents kind of have characters. Like, barely, but they exist. We know that his dad was a scientist, and they played hide and seek, and bad things happened, and they were killed, and it was very sad for Peter.
I mean, I will say I remember watching this in theaters, and like the opening scene where, you know, his mom is like sobbing and leaving him in the rainstorm broke my heart. And I'm like, you're not gonna see that ever again. My internal Jewish mother kicked in.
Yeah, no, that part at the beginning is a very good scene. You could see the strong bond he had with his parents. You can see why he was so upset when he found his dad's old suitcase. And it's a lot of like good stuff. Like they really did build up that parental bond well. And I think that parental bond and a couple of other things make this movie different enough that, like, while we are watching another Spider-Man origin movie, it's not quite the same movie, and it's definitely not the same tone.
So maybe that's sort of where we should start, which is kind of trying to understand what the tone of this movie is. But I think the biggest question is, because I think you asked this question, because what is from when we did the original trilogy, is this a Peter Parker movie or is this a Spider-Man movie? And I think this is a Peter Parker movie.
That was actually going to be the next question. I think this is very strongly a Peter Parker movie because if you actually watch it, Spider-Man does show up frequently, but it's always in line with like kind of Peter Parker and what he's trying to do at
Not
that time.
to mention, the name Spider-Man doesn't even get said until middle way through the film. It's only when Peter saves that little boy whose dad is a construction worker that we actually hear the word Spider-Man, which is pretty crazy considering like you're a little bit more than halfway through the movie. Before you actually like, you get to see Spider-Man, but you don't get to know Spider-Man. And this is the first time that you actually get to hear the name Spider-Man. So, what is this Peter? Like, is this the same nerd we watched in the same Raimi films?
Absolutely not. And that's kind of the third question is what do we think of Quippy Spider-Man? Or Quippy Peter Parker, because this is not the same nerd in the first movie who somehow got bullied in college. This Peter Parker, of course, struggles through high school, but you can see that he's, at the end of the day, he's a good guy. He steps in when Flash is bullying some other poor kid, but he's still kind of a nerd. He still struggles a little bit. They break his camera. And it's also kind of a mystery movie, a little bit more than the others, because we're also trying to figure out what's happening to his dad. That's never answered, but it's really Peter's journey into figuring all that out. And they try to make him funny. And to some extent, it works. But how fu like some of it, a lot of it hits, and some of it doesn't.
I laughed so hard when Peter uses is in the suit for the first time and he stops that guy and he pulls out a knife and Peter crumbles to the ground. He's like, "No, knives! I want knives!" I agree. I think for the most part, the humor works. I think the personality, like in the original, Peter's personality is guilt and angst and nerd. Here, I feel like he stands up to bullies even before he has powers, right? He stands up to like the scene where he stands up to Flash happens before he gets spider powers. This Peter is sly. He cons his way into the tour group at Oscorp, right? And we see this Peter do science.
This Peter can do science.
Like, yes, in Spider-Man 2, before anybody comes at me, we do see like him and Doc Ock having like scientific discussions and understanding sciencey things. But we don't actually see Spider-Man or Peter Parker do science. Here we have Peter developing the web shooters, studying his father's algorithm, doing research on spiders, telling Gwen what she needs to do to build the cure, even though like I think she probably just like, I think she figured it out herself more than he gave her directions. He was like, "Hey, there's a cure, you need to make it." And she's like, "Yeah, okay, bro." So this Peter is, it's like you have, this is why I think the Spider-Man films are different generations of Spider-Man. So Sam Raimi films are 60s Ditko, Kirby, Lee Spider-Man. This is John Romita Sr. This is Gary, J excuse me, Jerry Conway. This is that silver to bronze age, mostly bronze age, amazing Spider-Man. Even though it's not as like political or stuff like that, this is that like this is more six like 70s 60s into the 70s Spider-Man, I would say, because he's a little bit more hip. He doesn't wear he's like he's less dorky. He has dorky moments, like him talking to girls is always a little bit dorky because he's still Peter Parker. But he has a personality that you can dissect and introspect with. I think, I hate to say it, but I think this Peter Parker feels more like a real person.
That's kind of definitely the vibe he goes for, and one of the reasons why I do enjoy this movie so much is that he's real. He actually feels like a person you could meet on the street and get along with. Like, what am it's all scene, and it takes like 5 hot seconds, but it also leads into why I think this movie is the better Flash character by far.
Yeah.
Is that there's one scene after Bet, of course, Uncle Ben dies. I'm sorry if that's a spoiler to everybody, but there's a scene where Peter goes to school after that happens, and Flash goes to confront him, and Peter like picks him up and holds him against the lockers. And instead of kind of freaking out about it, Flash asks him if that feels makes him feel better.
Yeah, I
And
actually made a note of that. It's a very human moment.
yeah, between them, because at this point they have been kind of bullying each other back and forth throughout this movie.
Yeah.
But even like Flash knows there's a limit on how much Peter's hurting at that moment.
Definitely. And it's interesting because we do see that again, that like for whatever reason, death definitely affects Flash. At the end of the film, we find out that he also came to Captain Stacy's funeral to support Gwen, even though arguably they're not friends. Well, he actually, wait, no, he does know her because she's his tutor.
Yep.
Because I liked that moment where Gwen was like, Gwen steps in after Peter. Stands up to Flash and Flash bullies him back and whatnot. And there's this moment where she's like, are we still on for tutoring? Like you need to get those grades up. Like, you don't have time for this crap. So tell me about Gwen Stacy.
Hey, so that's actually the next thing. In the battle of the love interest, who reigns supreme? And it's Gwen Stacy.
I mean, if we're going
Like, I'm
purely.
sorry to.
Are we going purely by the movies, right?
Yeah, well, yes, because the comics is a different story, because I'd argue that somehow in the comics, Gwen doesn't get a personality until later. But in terms of this movie, she is a much stronger love interest to Peter than Mary Jane is in the at least the second and third Spider-Man movie, where she becomes token damsel in distress rather than what feels like an actual human. Here, and I would even argue that in both movies, as bad as the second one can get, she also feels incredibly real.
She's also not a
And she
damsel in
actually
dis
does things.
and she's also not a damsel in distress in this movie.
No, absolutely not. Like, she's part of the reason they were able to stop the lizard in the first place. Like, and you can see the bond she has with her family, and you can see why her and Peter get along so well with each other, and like them slowly falling in love and getting together, and they have a really cute scene at her place on the balcony, and it's adorable.
And the chemistry between Andrew Garfield here and Emma Stone is off the charts.
No, it's incredibly well done, and their banter's really good. I mean, I think it was either before, like maybe during or after this movie, they actually started dating in real life for a little bit, and that's partially why the chemistry is so good, is that they also had that chemistry in real life. And she's just a really strong character. Like I said, she stands up to Flash in the movie. She helps defeat the Lizard. She's like the head intern at Oscorp under Dr. Connors.
So it looks like, sorry to interrupt here, but it looks like they started dating during the filming of the film, because it says, again, Wikipedia, take it with a grain of salt, yada, yada, yada. But in 2011, Garfield began dating the Amazing Spider-Man co-star Emma Stone during production of the film. So allegedly they broke up sometime in 2015, maybe afterwards, it doesn't matter. But it looks like they, at the very least, dated through both films.
Yeah, you can tell that these pe they were so good at their roles they actually fell in love in real life.
Yeah. And I think the writing here is also a lot stronger. Like, Gwen has this very, I don't want to use the term bombastic, but she has a no fucks left to give kind of personality, but in a good way. Where she's not afraid to speak her mind, she's not afraid to stand up for what she believes in, and she's not okay to call people out when they're doing something wrong or something that she thinks is stupid. Like, Emma sort of chastises Peter for standing up to Flash while also like, okay, yes, you should have done that, but you also kind of should have thought about the consequences if you did that.
Yeah, also good points. Like, and did she also like choose out Peter at the end of the movie when he's like, "I can't see you anymore"?
Choose out is the right word, because she like so she shows up to his house after the funeral and she's like, my dad died. He's like, okay, yeah, kind of knew that already. Today was his funeral. Yeah. And he's like, you know, I can't do this, we can't be together. And as she's walking away, she's got the umbrella on. It's a really pretty scene where she just turns around and she's like, he made you promise, didn't he? And Peter just kind of acknowledges it without acknowledging it. And then she walks away, which is so good because it illustrates that she understands what the situation is. And she also knows that, like, Peter's not doing this because he doesn't want to be with her. It's because of her dad, which, in a lot of ways, I think is respectful to Captain Stacy. I think Captain Stacy kind of had a point.
He kind
But
of does. Now, this is we're now we're on to Captain Stacy. This is actually the next question. Is he the secondary or like the third antagonist in this movie?
ooh, I don't know. Antagonist feels like a strong word. I guess in a
True,
way
but
he is like a secondary or tertiary antagonist because he is in conflict with Peter because he sees Spider-Man as this vigilante who's doing wrong things. And this is really well illustrated at that dinner when they're arguing about whether Spider-Man is a menace or a hero.
yeah.
But Captain Stacy also doesn't really tell the whole truth when he's telling the story to his family. He's like, oh, he's targeting civilians. Even though his cop, his like, you know, the people under him acknowledge the fact that he's not actually targeting random people, he's targeting criminals, which, yeah, still makes him a vigilante and what he's doing is technically illegal, don't get me wrong. But it's funny that Captain Stacy kind of omitted that little factoid from the conversation.
That is true. I think at some point he mentions that Spider-Man is targeting a particular looking individual, which he is. He's trying to find the person who murdered his Uncle Ben.
Yep.
And he spent a chunk of this movie trying to arrest Spider-Man.
Yep.
And he only kind of stops and switches when he realizes that Spider-Man is Peter Parker.
Which Peter was also the one that told him that Kurt Connors was the lizard and this is like his plan. And you know, he's been mutated by the DNA and transspecies genetics and yada, yada, yada. And Captain Stacy's like, yeah, okay, kid, go home. But he still tells his deputies to look into it. So at the very least, Captain Stacy, this is why, like, I don't like, is he Peter's antagonist? Sort of, but I can't really call him an antagonist because he's not really doing anything wrong. We just don't like it.
Yeah, he's technically doing his job very well. It's just that his job runs him very much into conflict with Peter. And again, the scene where he gets arrested, which is also, by the way, one of the best scenes of Spider-Sense used.
Tell the watchers more, the listeners more.
Okay. So in that scene in particular, they managed to put Spider-Man into handcuffs. He's sitting there on the ground, and then he can like sense the danger going on, break out of the handcuffs, and then just like kind of just plows through all the cops, and then he ends up like just like face to face with Captain Stacy, and then they have this conversation about like what's going on and what to do next. And it's just the action in this movie is really damn good.
I do have one complaint about the action. In one
All
shot,
right.
it works, but I can't do the first person flying thing. They did it at the end of the movie. In the first scene that they do it, it's to reveal the spider costume in full glory, so it makes sense to do it. But I really didn't like how they filmed the first person swinging because I think it was too shaky. And well, I understand why it was shaky, but to me, it took me away from the film a little bit. It was a little too disorienting. There is also one moment of like the CGI and all of the special effects were really, really good, except in one shot. And it's not, I think maybe it's just this particular effect, whatever they used, didn't age as well as as the rest of it did, because we're 10 over 10 years since this movie was made, and it still holds up very well. But there's a scene where Peter is balancing on like the two fingers, and then he falls down the building. And so there was just one shot where you're like, yep, yeah, that's very like it's just a little too obvious in CGI, which again is fine. The movie is like 10 years old, and 99.9% of it still holds up very well. What is really funny is when I watch that scene though, I accidentally turned off the sound without realizing. And if you rewatch the shot without the music, it's still a really cool shot. The music does add a little bit to it, but I actually enjoyed watching it without sound, of just like this transition of like him, balancing on the roof, first with the hand, then the fingers, and then he just falls back. It was really, really cool.
Oh yeah, one thing that I think did hold up really well also in this movie is the lizard. He just l still looks good
Yep.
in this movie, and it also like the lizard itself has an interesting personality, but it is essentially like, hey, we're fighting the Green Goblin again, but instead of the Green Goblin, it's the lizard because it's kind of the same backstory where the thing that he uses in order to improve everything makes him evil. And I'm like, okay, fine.
In the original 90s animated series, I think the lizard, it's a toss-up between the lizard and Doc Ock as my favorite figures from the animated series. Just because I think, whereas Goblin was just Goblin, there was less of this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing going on. Up to a point, you do have more of that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing going on with the lizard because you have this sweet doctor, Kirk Connors, who just wanted to, give people who have lost limbs their limbs back, essentially. Is transformed into this crazy lizard, and then he gets his like headspace back. And so he's still the lizard at times, but he's still himself. And I wish this movie would have done a little bit more with that aspect of it. But then I guess if they did, then it would have been even more like what they did with the Green Goblin in the original series. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe they should have just like not had that weird internal monologue in one scene, and just let the scene play out a little bit differently, and maybe that would have taken us away from the original.
Yeah, because actually thinking about now, Kirk Connors and Captain Stacy kind of opposite plot arcs, where Captain Stacy ends up siding with Spider-Man in the long run. Connors ends up becoming the villain because he starts working with Peter to kind of like help with his father's formula to create like artificial limbs on a mouse, and then he has to use it on himself because is he? I know he's named, but I cannot remember his name. The kind of smarmy guy who works directly for Osborn, who just wants Kurt Connors to hurry up and finish the damn formula so he can save Osborn's life. Yeah.
Oh, I legitimately just had it up. One second. The actor who played him, his name is Irfan Khan. I
Yeah.
apologize if I mispronounced that. Let's see. Filmography. Apparently, this man has been in a lot of movies. He has his own filmography page. He played Dr. Rajit Ratha, according to the Amazing Spider-Man credit. I did not know he was a doctor. He was very smarmy and didn't. I would take away his MD, PhD, whatever it is. Because he
Yeah.
was sort of more paraded, like he was presented as like Norman's right-hand man as opposed to a fellow scientist.
Kind of like a corporate executive type.
Yeah,
And
very
so
much
essentially,
so.
what he does is that he takes Kurt Connors' formula when it's like the first test is proven to work, and he's saying, we're just going to go inject this in veterans and pretend it's a vaccine. And that's what prompts Connors to inject it into himself, and he turns into the lizard. And the first time we really see the lizard is on the Battle of the Bridge, where he's actually trying to stop this guy from doing something that's utterly garbage.
Which he succeeds in, but also almost kills a whole bunch of people. But he tried.
Yeah. He tried. Not that Peter ever learns that, ever. Like, only we as the audience do.
Yeah, that's fair. And they never actually like build off of this plot point. It's sort of just like, okay, he stopped it, but now he's gonna, because I guess the serum has corrupted his brain, is gonna turn everybody into lizards. Which is then
Or some.
technically also pretty much what Norman Osborn was gonna do, but
It's the same villain plot.
I
Which, okay. like, the movie can't be perfect. That being said, though, I think the fights between the lizard and Peter are also fantastic, especially the one in the school. And I
yeah.
think this has the best Stan Lee cameo of any movie.
I do appreciate how short it is.
I
But
know.
the cameo is great because they're fighting through the school and they get into the library and Stan is wearing these like giant headphones and I guess he's the librarian and he just like saunters off like nothing's wrong, like doesn't is like completely ignores everything. He cannot hear anything happening outside. I wonder if they had placed some kind of like product placement on those headphones, because if they can tune out Spider-Man fighting with the lizard, which is not exactly a quiet endeavor, like I would want those headphones.
Oh, one, yes, absolutely. But I'm going to pivot us a little bit to two other very important characters that we haven't talked about yet. What do we think of this version of his aunt and uncle?
Love them. Best version of Aunt May and Uncle Ben, fight me.
Hands down, absolutely.
Like, please.
No, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, Sally Field and Martin Sheen are like amazing actors. Like, absolutely brilliant, right? Sally Field, like, they both have a crap ton of awards, probably. They've been in Oscar-winning films, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is like peak incredible talent. And not to knock the original Aunt May and Uncle Ben, but these guys have just a bit more personality to them. They have a lot more depth. Like, we spend way more time with Uncle Ben, I think, or maybe it's about the same amount of time with Uncle Ben, but we get to know this Uncle Ben. We understand this Uncle Ben a little bit more. Like, Uncle Ben definitely resents his brother, Richard Parker, a little bit for basically leaving his child and dying. And it's not because he resents the fact that he had to raise Peter. It's very clear he resents the fact that Peter is now forever burdened by the loss of his parents. And so he's resenting Richard for putting his kid through that.
Oh yeah, that's a vibe. And they are such a cute little married couple.
So cute. And then Aunt May, I think, is like she's like she has a little bit more personality, right? She's willing to get into arguments if where necessary, and she has her own opinions. And the whole thing about the meatloaf between them was so cute.
That's one of my favorite scenes. It's like they get into like this little thing about the meatloaf where he says that, like, yeah, I never liked your meatloaf. Or it's like, no one's ever liked your meatloaf. And then she's like, what do you mean? I've been making you my meatloaf for years. Which sounds like, yeah, okay, this is peak married couple. They wrote these them incredibly well. And you feel the chemistry between them, which is why it hurts so much when Uncle Ben dies.
What also, it's just like I feel like the conflict between the tension between Peter and Uncle Ben in this moment just felt like so much more personal. And it's not one of those like, oh, you're not my real dad. It's the fact that like Peter's clearly going through something. And Uncle Ben doesn't know what it is, but he's also really angry because this is like the one thing he asked him to do, which is make sure Aunt May does not walk home by herself, because it's late at night, and she's a adorably kind and sweet woman, at night walking 12 blocks from the subway or whatever it is. And Aunt May is like, I'm not a child. I can take care of myself. This is not a big deal. And Uncle Ben's like, no. This is a big deal. And that's where we get that, like, the with great power comes great responsibility shtick. But it feels less like a mantra or a lecture. It's, I think it's more of like I don't know. It's like, it felt more natural. Does that make sense?
It does. It feels like it actually like fit in with the conversation rather than like I don't know what was with like the first like Spider-Man movies we watched, but I felt like Aunt May was very good at like being the platitudes woman. Or it's like, I am the advice old lady. I'm just going to give you advice all the time. And here we don't get that. We get very real people who are also like struggling with what Peter's going through and they don't know how to handle it. And
Yeah.
yeah, with great power comes great responsibility. It fits. It feels smooth. And I feel like the death of Uncle Ben, despite this being the second time we've watched it, actually hits harder
I think.
because we feel for him, because we see how good their relationship is, and
Yes.
because he wouldn't be there. Well, the way he dies and how it, I feel like it's just a little bit more tragic because he actually, instead of being like, I think a random carjacking where it's just wrong place, wrong time in the first movie, he actually tries to stop the guy that Peter failed to stop.
Well, I mean, he did that a little bit in the original too. But the difference here was he was running away. And then, Uncle Ben was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And then he tried to kind of talk down the gunman. Here, it like Ben sort of puts himself in that situation because he's out looking for Peter and he hears the clerk screaming, stop him, somebody stop him. Like, and he goes to stop the bad guy. That is, he has that's that whole tenet of he's currently a human being with the ability to help. Therefore, it is his responsibility to help. Not, well, this is coincidence. I don't want to die. And then there's like a struggle for the gun, and then it goes off, and Uncle Ben dies. And then Peter hears the gunshot, rushes over, and yeah, it's quicker in some ways. But what really gets to me is I think maybe because there was like this implied larger age gap, like in the original, Aunt May and Uncle Ben feel more like his grandparents than his parents. Or his guardians, you know what I mean? But here, Aunt May and Uncle Ben really feel like his parents. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It feels like these people actually raised him.
There's a
And
really good moment when they're in the basement just chatting about, how to fix how to fix the leak in the basement. And Uncle Ben's asking his advice and he gives him advice. He's like, "Is this something you can fix like today?" He's like, "No, I'm gonna have to go to the hardware store." Like, it feels like there's that closeness, there's that chemistry.
yeah, like they've been living together for a long time, but you can also still feel like Peter's struggles to know who his dad was and why he died and ran off mysteriously and trying to piece together all of that. And
Which is not, which is unfortunately not an answer we ever get.
I think we were supposed to if we ever got a third Spider-Man movie. And the second one, if I remember it, does explore it a little bit more, but you're right, we never do get an answer, which
Because
is a real
somebody at
shame.
Sony decided that instead of a Spider-Man movie, we needed to shove as much crap as we could to set up a Sinister Six that never was. Because there, I
Well,
said it now.
I am all for bringing back Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, like 100%, especially after the most recent Spider-Man movie. But do not bring back a Sinister Six movie. Let that die.
To be honest, like, yes, the Venom movies have some moderate success, and Morbius was apparently not good. And now we have Kraven the Hunter. Can Sony please stop making movies about Peter's bad guys? Because I don't care. I don't want to watch Kraven the Hunter do Kraven the Hunter things. I want to watch Peter Parker and Spider-Man fight Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah, we also have the Madam Web movie coming out soon.
Okay, that does look pretty good though. But
It
the reason
does.
it looks pretty good is not so much Madame Web, it's the fact that they have like Julia Carpenter and Anya Corazon and like the others, like the Spider Girls, Spider Women, which like how many times have we talked about the fact that like aside from the animated series, which is like just I think the 90s one. That or what was it? The Iron Man series, I think, actually had Julia Carpenter in at least a couple episodes, right? We didn't really get, and I think Spider-Woman had her own very short-lived series back in the days of like Spider-Man and his amazing friends. We haven't really and we have Miles Morales, but we've never really had an in-depth exploration of any of the female Spider-Man characters aside from Spider-Verse, which was basically mainly just Miles and Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, no, that's going to be an interesting movie, I think, and hopefully it's going to be good. But we're still on our little Amazing Spider-Man movie. So, we've talked about a lot of the characters, but overall, what did we think of the plot?
I mean, I feel like we also kind of talked about it. Like the first half of the film, I think, is great in setting up, okay, overall, the story arc is great. I do wish it tried to play a little bit more around with the lizard aspect of it and what made the lizard different from Goblin. Because, as we're doing now, and a lot of people going into this film, we're going to compare it to the original. And so I wish they had kind of done something a little bit different. But overall, I think they did a really good job of setting up elements that ended up paying off later on, like Peter saving the kid, whose dad turned out to be a construction guy who called the cranes so that Peter, who was injured by the police, if I remember correctly, police brutality, could get to where he needed to. So that also, I guess, was reminiscent of like the train scene and maybe an Amazing Spider-Man 2, but it's a really that was the Sp Amazing Spider-Man 2, right? I'm not crazy. Or I mean right this Raimi Spider-Man 2.
Yes, that was. And also, the crane scene's the best scene in the movie.
It is just so visually incredible.
They really sell well in this movie that Peter Parker and Spider-Man is the Spider-Man of the people. Like, the entire, like, one of the reasons why the construction worker did what he did is, of course, Peter went to save his son. But Peter had a choice between saving his son and chasing after the lizard. And he chose to save the son. And that payoff is so good, and it's just like visually that scene's stunning. Like, again, the action behind it is fantastic.
Can we just talk a little bit about Peter saving that kid in the car? So the lizard, I think it was the lizard, he like knocks over one of the vehicles and Peter manages to stuck it into the web just so that it doesn't crash, but it turns out there's like a little kid inside. And so Peter jumps on the car and this kid is terrified, which like, yeah, I would be too. And Peter, Spider-Man is trying to calm him down, and it's not working. So he takes off his mask. And he's like, hey, I'm just a guy. I'm just a person like you. Hey, man, like this is like a 10-year-old kid. Like, I'm gonna get you out of here. And I think this scene does twofold. One, yes, it establishes, like, as you said, Peter's humanity and that he's a person of the people. But it cements the fact that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Spider-Man is not Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And,
I almost
No, go ahead.
No, I almost feel like Spider-Man is something that Peter Parker does and not something about who he is as a person. At least not in this movie.
Definitely.
Like
And it goes back to like the debate of like who's the real alter ego? Is it Bruce Wayne or is it Batman? Here it's Spider-Man is the alter ego because this is Peter Parker. Peter Parker puts on the mask because he's just a good person and wants to help people. And they actually explain why he decides to put on a costume. It's because he chases after those bad guys and beats them up. And they're like, we know what you look like. And we're gonna get you. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's gonna happen.
And then he also takes off the mask when he needs to, which is kind of the like the train scene in the second Spider-Man movie is also good. It is, it has its moments, but it's like the entire thing. It's like, we're not going to tell a living soul who you are, as if any of them would ever recognize generic white boy man. But I don't know, like this.
Sorry. For the younger viewers, this was the days before everybody and their mother had a smartphone, so they couldn't just take a picture or a video of Peter Parker and be like, "Yo, I just met Spider-Man." So you wouldn't have like the scene in Shang-Chi where that guy's like in when they're fighting in the bus and the guy's like, "Yo, so hey guys, so like, I've been listen, I took some karate, so I feel really qualified to judge this fight scene happening in front of me."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still such a good scene.
Very much so.
But so in like I guess if I had to like really differentiate this the Amazing Spider-Man or at least Amazing Spider-Man 1 from the Sam Raimi movies, it's that again, the Sam Raimis, that's Spider-Man's movies. Like Peter Parker barely plays a role in it. Here it's this is Peter Parker's movie and Andrew Garfield plays an amazing Peter Parker, which this movie would not work if he didn't. Like, it utterly fall flat if Peter himself did not work.
Also, hot take. I think this is the most Jewish Spider-Man, and not just because Andrew Garfield is Jewish and playing Spider-Man, but I don't know how to explain it. There's a Jewish energy here. Like, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's like in the like sweet family chemistry, or it's in the vast amount of sarcasm utilized. But this one feels more Jewish to me than the Sam Raimi films.
All right. And then again, it's like the school he goes to feels real. And the conflicts he's facing feels real. It's a lot of just like realness. But let me ask like this one other thing. What did we think of the decision of switching back to the spider webs being tech rather than being biological?
I'm a sucker for web shooters. I think it's a great way to illustrate, again, what would they this film is illustrating throughout is that Peter is really good at fixing things. He's really smart. And we see him utilizing that intelligence of, like, yeah, he skateboards and he's into photography, but he can also build cool web shooters.
Oh yeah. And you can see it in like his daily life. Like I think he created the lock on his door, which was really neat too. And it's just like it's infused in all of this.
Yeah, and there's also, like I said, the scene in the basement between Uncle Ben and Peter when where Uncle Ben is asking Peter's advice, even though he's a plumber or whatever it is that he does for a job. I don't think this movie actually tells us, but it doesn't matter. Is that he's asking Peter's advice on how to fix it, and Peter is the one that is ultimately able to fix it. It's not, oh, we're gonna paint the kitchen. Like, cool, thanks, Grandpa. I mean, Uncle Ben. And there's nothing wrong with that. But here we do see that Peter is really technical and like he's reading his dad's journal and he seems to understand what he's talking about to some extent. He reads like we saw more sciency from this Spider-Man than we did in all three Sam Raimi movies, which again is not a bad thing because the Sam Raimi films really focused on the Daily Bugle element, the photographer, the classic 60s Spider-Man. The early 60s Spider-Man, whereas this is the Amazing Spider-Man. This is more of the like the Conway Spider-Man. This is like more leaning into the 70s. With maybe like so it's different creative team bringing a different aspect of Spider-Man to life.
Absolutely. So, any kind of like wrap-up thoughts you have of this movie?
Let me check the notes. I think I had a couple questions, actually, now that I think about it. Let's see. I liked, oh, there's this really, it's kind of a goof. I didn't really get the point of it, but during the swing through on the cranes, there's that one cop that just like stops traffic. So I guess everyone can watch Spider-Man fly by because it's not like Spider-Man needed there to be no traffic.
Well, I think my idea was that like if it would be a hilarious scene if Spider-Man was just swinging through the streets and all of a sudden got hit by a truck.
I mean, I would hope he'd know how to avoid that, but he hasn't been web swinging, I guess, that long.
Yeah. So I get why, and it's I think that's more of a hey, the cops are now on his side scene rather than his enemy that he's been like trying to go against the entire movie because
Okay,
he's
yeah, that makes
always
sense.
like throughout the movie he's been in conflict with the cops like in the same scene it's like no my weakness is knives after like the cops show up in that scene later on it's like I just did your job for you and he kind of has that same vibe at the dinner table with Captain Stacy so I think it's that was the point of the scene, but the way they did it was a little silly.
I also really, so again, this is like comparing Aunt May and Aunt May. And there's like when Peter, after Gwen leaves, Peter goes back inside and Aunt May is like, oh, that's a girl. It's like, yes, it was. Did you ask her out? No, I did not. And Peter gets all self-deprecating and Aunt May doesn't give him sage advice or like, you know, telling him that you have to believe in yourself and other people will see. Like she just like, no, don't put yourself down. You're great. That's kind of the gist of it. There's no like the world, like, you know, Aunt May in the original series had a little one too many platitudes, which is fine, but it felt like here Peter needed reassurance, not advice, and that's what I felt Aunt May gave him.
Actually, there is one other point I do want to bring up. What do we think of the death of Captain Stacy?
Coming a mile away.
Well, you know, it's a canon event, right?
Which again, I will fight every. I will fight tooth and nail to note that I don't think Captain Stacy's death matters as much as Gwen's does. Like in this film, it does. In the comics, I really like. Peter didn't need a reminder that with great power comes great responsibility. And also, Peter was not in any way involved in Captain Stacy's death. In the comics, I think he dies because there's like debris falling and he saves a little girl. So he dies doing his job, being a police officer and saving people. So there's really nothing for Peter to guilt himself over other than the fact that, you know, that's the dad of the girl I'm dating. And it sucks. I think if we're going to talk about important canon events in the greater Spider multiverse, I think the death of a loved one, whether love interest or parent, is way more important than Captain Stacy.
100%. But in terms of this movie in particular, it does not hurt as much as Uncle Ben's death does. It's still a little bit of a punch, but you saw it like coming 10 billion miles away. Like, he dies fighting the lizard and doing his best to save for the people in the city, and then he asks Peter, "Hey, don't date my daughter so she doesn't get caught up in all of this." And you
Yeah,
know what?
I'm sure it'll work out exactly like Stacy wanted, and nothing bad will ever happen because, you
Nope.
know, Gwen will totally listen to her dad and not make her own decision about anything.
It's like he doesn't know his daughter at all.
Yeah.
I think it's a good character arc for him. And I will say that, like, the characters actually change in this movie.
Yeah. I think it's also, I think like going back to Gwyneth, but like every character does not start this movie the same way they did, right? Flash, generic bully, ends up with a little personality, and we see he's a Spider-Man fan. And him and Peter kind of seem to have a friendship now, which I think is great. Gwen starts out as this like kind of uptight, like science girl who gives off this vibe that she's better than everybody else. And actually we learned she's, you know, from this like high achieving family and she's very sweet and she loves her family and she loves Peter. And like and they have good chemistry in the fact that Peter felt comfortable enough to just tell her immediately what was happening.
Thank God. Like, seriously, in the time, like, they actually have a conversation about it. And it's amazing. It's not like, I know me being Spider-Man will result in you dying. It's like, hey, this is an important part of my life. If you're going to be with me, you need to know. By the way, I'm Spider-Man.
Oh, I do have one correction that came out in the trivia. Apparently, the George Stacy wanting to stop Spider-Man and Gwen supporting Spider-Man is a contrast to the mainstream comics, where George Stacy was apparently a strong supporter of Spider-Man and confessed on his deathbed that he was aware of Peter's identity, while Gwen blames Spider-Man for her father's death, and as such, Peter never informed her of his identity, which makes her death's. Wait, if she never knew that Peter was Spider-Man, then her getting killed, well, kidnapped, and then killed by the goblin in Amazing Spider-Man is. So much worse.
Oh yeah, did you not know that in the comics? Gwen
It's
Stacy never or learns that Peter Parker's Spider-Man.
just like it's so weird that it just like it never I never even thought what about whether or not she knew. Like to me, it didn't matter, or like my brain just subconsciously decided it wasn't relevant and said it, whatever. But yeah, so I do like that they flipped it here and that, you know. Captain Stacy, I think it actually makes more sense for Captain Stacy to oppose Spider-Man because, again, vigilantes and police officers. And it makes more sense for Gwen to be like, you know, the sweet, the love interest, but with a personality.
Yeah. And it's like it applies to everybody. Like, Peter Parker is a very different character from when he started to when he ends. Like, he goes through like this journey of what it means to go out and be Spider-Man, what it means to hold great power comes great responsibility. Like, Aunt May changes, Uncle Ben well ends up dead. And of course Kurt Connors literally becomes the lizard. So
He's
it's not
also the only villain so far in a Spider-Man movie to survive at the end.
Yeah, he doesn't. Right, because in the Sam Raimi trilogy, he murders all his villains. Well, not
Everybody
murder,
dies.
but everybody's dead. The
Yep.
lizard actually lives. And he helps save Peter's life in the end, in a really like little tragic scene where the arm that he has holding Peter slowly dissolves in front of him, and he's left armless.
Yeah, that was actually like, as I was watching it happen, the way that the arm breaks apart, I went, oh wow. It was very well done. And then he actually continues protecting Peter though, because there's a little after credit scene where Doc's in prison and some guy who is also working for Norman Osborn shows up and he's like, did you tell Peter Parker what happened to his parents? Or his father, because the mom doesn't matter apparently. And Dr. Connors is like, no, I didn't tell him anything, which technically is true, but he also doesn't reveal that he knows Peter Parker or Spider-Man. So just a small itty bitty little bit there, but it is like overall, it is a solid film. And I think so far, it is the best of the Spider-Man films that we've seen up to this point. I'm gonna have to like, with all of like the analytical views we've brought onto Spider-Man, and technically I have already reviewed Spider-Man Homecoming and Far From Home. It will be interesting to see now that I'm watching all of these Spider-Man movies back to back, how my view of Spider-Man as a character in the MCU changes, if it does.
Yeah, we'll get into my opinion of the MCU Spider-Man when we review the third of the MCU Spider-Man movies, and that's going to be a vent session as like Iron Man's little protege. But
Basically, I'm just gonna mute my mic, guys, and we're gonna let Caitlin rant for the first like 20 minutes because you've already heard mine and Mike's thoughts about the first two Spider-Man movies in the MCU. So it'll be interesting to get Caitlin's opinion on those before we jump into No Way Home. Yeah, that's the one. So
is
much home in the titles, yet no home to be found.
oh God. No, there's no po yeah Spider-Man. All right, folks, so that's kind of our wrap-up for Amazing Spider-Man. What do we have next?
Torture, an hour and 2 hours of soft torture, and the death that everyone saw coming a mile away, but we're somehow still upset by. But we'll get to that when we get to that. Caitlin, are you on social media yet?
I am at least on Tumblr as Flying Nightwitch if you want to track me down there.
And she's gonna get on Twitter or Threads at some point because I have enough social media accounts to manage, so someone has to take on the mantle of the Nerdy Notion social media.
Yes, I will take over the mantle of the Nerdy Notion social media.
You heard it here, folks. We have proof. There's a recording of it for legal purposes.
Exactly. So as we swing out of this recording.
And of course, you guys can find me on everything from Blue Sky to Threads to Instagram to Twitter. I refuse to call it anything but Twitter. At Geeky Kaplan with a K after, Billy Kaplan, the next Jewish character to be butchered in the MCU.
Yay!
So let's take our spider webs and Caitlin's snark and swing down to Amazing Spider-Man 2.
We'll see you all there, folks.